Hello, and welcome to Jilly Bowl, a podcast about that song you know but know nothing about. I'm Jamie.
I'm Emily.
Each week, we'll break down a topic from Billy Joel's song, We Didn't Start the Fire. We'll take turns on being the expert each week as we dive into these people, events, etc. Disclaimer, if you are already a history buff, this podcast is not for you. If you are just a sweet dum-dum like us and want to know a little more, you're in the right place. This week's topic is Mickey Mantle.
Cool.
Do you know any? You know who he is, though.
I do know who he is, but I know nothing about him.
He was a baseball player.
I knew that. That's the thing I knew.
That's the thing you knew.
Yeah.
You knew he was a good baseball player.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know his nickname?
Is it Mickey Mouse?
No.
What is it?
Well, they called him the Mick, which, like, we could go in a deep dive how we want the Mick to come back on the TV.
Such a good show. I was thinking about that the other day.
So good. But they also called him the Commerce Comet.
One more time?
Commerce Comet.
You'll know why.
Yeah. But you'll know why. And he lived a life.
Cool.
The more and more I kept reading about him, So there were a lot of things that I didn't know about him, obviously. Baseball is a sport that I understand and can get behind.
Same.
And like watching and hearing about. So he was a baseball player from the early 50s to late 60s. So he was around for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
And his whole career, he played for the Yankees.
Oh.
Yeah.
I think I maybe didn't know that. I don't know.
So we'll start when he was born. Just kind of, I wanted to say before I get started, if you hear the little truffle.
Our little truffle pig.
Our producer. Dr. Pepper.
Our producer, Dr. Pepper.
He's here with us again, observing and making sure that we're doing everything right. Touching all the right buttons, recording at the right time.
He's yawning right now. It's so rude.
And, yeah, he's really bored with us. He wants the show to get started.
Really unprofessional.
Will do, Dr. Pepper. All right. Mickey Charles Mantle was born October 20th, 1931, in Spavinaw, Oklahoma.
Spavinaw.
To his parents, Lavelle and Elvin Mantle. But Elvin's nickname was Mutt. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
He was actually named after a Hall of Fame catcher, Mickey Cochran. But oddly enough, Mickey Cochran's first name wasn't actually Mickey. Like, that was his changed, his, like stage name or
sure.
whatever you call it.
Right.
His actual name was Gordon. He was quoted of saying, like, I'm glad that it's Mickey. Like,
Mickey over Gordon.
I wouldn't have liked Gordon. When he was four, his family moved to another town nearby named Commerce.
Oh.
See, that's where he gets the name.
Uh-huh.
One of Mickey's claims to fame was that he was a really good switch hitter. And so if you're a switch hitter, if you don't know, it's when you can bat either right-handed or left-handed.
I did know that, too.
Gosh, you know it all.
Baseball expert.
Baseball. When he grew up, his dad would pitch to him right-handed, and he would bat left-handed. And then his grandfather would pitch to him left-handed, and he would bat right-handed.
So did they do that intentionally to make him a better...
Maybe. It'd be smart too, but he learned that he could do it, and he could do it really well.
Okay.
It was kind of sad, though. Both his father and grandfather died quite young.
Oh.
They both died of a Hodgkin's disease.
Oh.
So, yeah, his grandfather died in 1944, and his dad died in 1952, only at age 40.
Wow.
But he grew up... all-around athlete playing football, basketball, and baseball, which was his true favorite sport. He was actually offered a football scholarship by the Sooners, which is the Oklahoma mm-hmm. team. And his career almost didn't get started because of football. He was at a practice game, and he was kicked in the shin.
Ouch.
And developed osteomyelitis.
Okay.
which this is another kind of crazy thing, that was incurable at the time. So, like, it's like, I didn't do a lot more research into it, but basically, like, your bone, like, is deteriorating or something, or I don't know.
Gross.
Sorry, I don't know. But, like, it basically, his leg would have needed to be amputated off. But penicillin was invented.
Oh, thank God.
So he went to, like, a children's hospital to get this penicillin to solve that problem.
Oh, okay.
In which I was like, I don't know why I thought penicillin was around forever.
No, yeah.
I don't know anything.
No, that's okay. Because wasn't penicillin invented around the same time? No. Mm-mm, I'm going to stop right there.
Okay.
I'm about to say something dumb. Keep going, please.
So he recovered from that. And then he started his baseball career in Kansas with the Baxter Springs Whiz Kids.
That's so weird.
I know.
That was my name, too.
Yeah.
That's where I'm from.
So he did that when he was 17.
Okay.
And then once he graduated high school, a scout who had seen him playing there when he was younger returned again to sign him to a minor league contract. And he got signed for $140 a month and a $1,500 signing bonus.
That probably was pretty good at
when
the time.
When you're 18 years old.
Right.
I'd be okay with that.
I'd take it.
So he was signed to the Yankees Class D League, which was in Kansas and Missouri League, and he played shortstop. He almost wanted to quit because he was like, this is stupid. Like, I don't want to be playing for a D league. But his father kept him in it. And he's like, no, you just got to keep playing. You just got to keep working towards it. And you'll get there. You're good. A fun fact. I thought it was cool. He played when in Kansas. It's in Independence, Kansas, at Schultes Stadium, which is the same site of the first night game in organized baseball.
Oh, interesting.
So that was another thing that I didn't really think about, that night games hadn't really been able to happen because you needed lights. Because
darkness.
Yeah. So that was fun to think about, and this is also where he hit his first professional home run. So that's like a big place to go someday, I feel like, if you're a baseball enthusiast. He did super well that year, and then the next year he was bumped up to Class C. He won a batting title, hit 26 home runs, and 136 RBIs, which is good.
Mm-hmm.
The next year, 1951, he was invited to the Yankees camp, and he did really good at spring training. And the manager, who is Casey Stengel, put him in as a right fielder instead of shortstop. And Casey was his manager for, like, the most of the time that he was a player for the Yankees.
Okay.
But he got hired, or would be on the team, and his salary was $7,500. But comparatively to this year, or, like, this time of year, oh my God. This life that we live here now,
the time that is now times,
is equivalent to $72,000 back then.
Oh,
so like just starting up.
Okay.
When nobody knew him,
but also like the nature of professional athlete.
Yeah, how
salary
much?
Is so different. That is crazy.
Yeah. They gave him number 6. Mm-hmm. For his jersey, which at the time basically meant that they thought he was going to be the next big thing.
Oh.
Because, and I've never realized this, but Babe Ruth's number was 3.
Mm-hmm.
Lou Gehrig's number was 4.
Okay.
Joe DiMaggio's number was 5.
Whoa.
So they were like, you're going to be big.
Okay, I didn't realize this either, so I don't know if that makes us both dumb or,
maybe.
Or just that we're not experts on...
Like, I always thought that the numbers were always random.
I thought if it was a lower number, it meant that you were a better player, but I don't know why.
See? Well, you were right, basically.
Okay.
In the 1951 World Series, Willie Mays, who was, like, brand new starting out, too, hit a ball out into the field, and Joe DiMaggio, who was playing center field, and Mickey Mantle ran to get it.
Mm-hmm.
Mantle got out of the way, leaving Joe DiMaggio to catch the ball. Uh-huh. But Mantle, in getting out of the way, tripped over an exposed drain pipe and hurt his right knee really badly.
Stop hurting your legs.
Oh my God, he doesn't stop. He gets hurt all the time.
I'm not ready for this.
He hurt his knee so badly. And they said later on that he tore his ACL. But there was no, they didn't fix that then. Like, there was no surgery to solve that at the time.
What so the quan?
He played the rest of his baseball career with a torn ACL.
Are you serious?
Yeah.
I hate that. So, oh my God. I mean, like, that's cool, but also I hate it. And I have a dumb question.
Yeah. I hope I know the
answer. No, it's okay. Well, it's okay if you don't. Joe DiMaggio is in the song.
Mm-hmm.
Have we done that episode?
No, but we talked about him in Marilyn Monroe.
Okay. I knew we talked about him a lot with Marilyn, but we haven't done that episode.
Not yet.
Okay.
Not yet.
Got it.
Some would question if we should have done that one first.
Some might say. There's a lot of baseball players in this song.
There are. And like
baseball
a couple
players
teams.
And boxers.
Yeah.
Billy.
He likes the sports.
That's fine. Okay. More about Mickey and his horrible, horrible leg problems.
Yeah, his... So he, of course, like after being hurt, he fell into a bit of a slump. And went back down to a Kansas farm team called the Blues, ironically. It's like he was in a slump.
He was in the Blues.
He was at the Blues. And he really lost momentum. And again, he called his dad and was like, I don't think I can do this. And this time, Mutt drove out to get him. And the quote that I read said that Mutt told him, I thought I raised a man. I see I raised a coward instead. You can come back to Oklahoma and work the mines with me. To which he was like, hell no, I'll stay. I'm going to stay. I'm going to do this. I got this. I don't want to work in the mines.
That should be a motivational poster.
Right?
You can come back and work the mines.
Oh my God.
I raised a man.
Yeah.
The
times.
I like it.
But yeah, he broke out of his slump and hit 11 home runs and 50 RBIs in those 40 games that he was down in Kansas City again.
Okay.
So like he proved himself that he was ready to come back up. And then he was called back up, but then he was wearing number 7. I don't know.
Okay.
So they're like, I don't know, you're not going to be number 6, but you could be number 7. Sure. I don't know. During that year, like, that was kind of a crazy year because that was also the year his dad died. Uh-huh. 1952 was his dad dying. But, okay. You know, Hodgkin's disease isn't something that's right. Quick. So, like, there was all of that happening.
Sick. Okay.
And he also married his wife. Merla.
There's some really good names in this episode.
Yeah, Merla.
Merla.
They did have 4 kids together, and I'll kind of go into them a little bit later.
Mm-hmm.
But he got married, and then 1952 was really the big start to his fame. He moved to center field to replace Joe DiMaggio after Joe DiMaggio retired.
Right.
And he was selected as an all-star, and he played center field for a long time, until 1965. So okay. He was like, that was his position. Then he moved to left field, and then his last 2 seasons he played first base. But he won the Triple Crown, he was MVP, he was like actually MVP for like many years in
Does
a row.
The horses win Triple Crown?
I don't know. No,
do you know
there's
what I'm
like,
talking about?
No, Triple Crown is a horse thing too, but I think it's a,
baseball,
baseball thing too.
Okay.
Obviously, it means like you're all around good player.
Earlier when I said I know baseball, I meant like a basic understanding the same as like an 8-year-old.
I hope that it's that triple something else, and then I just like absentmindedly put crown because that's what I was thinking of too.
That'd be great.
Either way, he won the Triple Crown.
He won the Triple Crown. He ran faster than all the other horses. Okay.
By 1961, he became the highest paid active player in baseball. Which I tried to look into because it was really confusing to me because it said that he signed another $75,000 contract.
Okay.
Which I'm like, that doesn't sound like a lot.
Wait, but wasn't it $7,200 earlier?
Yeah. Like.
But was it $75,000?
Yeah.
What did you just say?
$75,000.
But then.
Which is well over $600,000 to today's dollars.
Okay. So his first contract was for $7,200.
I think so.
And then his second contract was for $75,000.
But So I think what they are trying to say is that he was a very, like, at that time, like, Babe Ruth, Joe DiMaggio, Lou Gehrig, like, they were all still really popular.
Okay.
Even after they retired, so they were still making money. I don't know. But that's he was like, really up there, and he reached up to $100,000 in 1963.
Okay.
So, like, he was quite popular, and they wanted to keep him at the Yankees. And it's kind of sad, and I mean, I am not necessarily a Yankee fan. I think I might have been back in the day.
Okay.
Like, when all of this was going on, but...
In the 50s?
Maybe.
You were alive?
If I were.
Oh, I'm sorry. I missed that part. I was like, wait, are you time traveler? I'm sorry, I was Googling something.
Oh my god, are you fact-checking me?
No, but it made me think of, okay, Bryce Harper just signed
the
deal with the Phillies.
Yeah.
Do you know how much that was for?
No. A lot.
Do you want to guess?
No.
Okay. I like making people guess, and you're always like, please don't make me
no,
guess.
No, because it will be wrong.
No. It's...
A ton.
So much money. $330 million. That's more money than I can put my brain around.
No. And, oh my god. Mm-hmm. So, that is a good point. When Bryce Harper came back and they played here already this year...
Oh, yeah.
Fans were booing. They were straight up booing him here.
Good.
I don't like that. That makes me sad.
Oh, that makes you sad. I don't feel that.
Good, you left.
I don't feel that bad. He has $330 million.
No, I don't. I thought about that too. And he's like, man. I listened to his interview and he was like, oh, well, I have a great fan base now in Philly and those are the people I'm playing for now. I'm like, okay, whatever you have to do.
I guess. I mean, it has to be hard to get booed at your job, but I also don't feel that bad for you when you have 300. I can't even say how many dollars it is. I'm drunk on the dollars. Okay, let's get back to Mickey. I'm sorry.
Cheers to that.
Yeah.
But Mickey Mantle also was not, like, the New York fans were not all convinced by him. They judged him that he was not a New Yorker, that he was, like, they didn't like his Midwestiness. Like, they thought he was a hick.
Rude.
I know. And they also had the fact that, like, he replaced Joe DiMaggio, and they were like, you're not as good.
Yeah.
But with help from his teammates who knew him, they helped him gain the support from the press, and then people became more fans.
Good.
I could go into his long career and, like, give stats for years, but, like,
please don't.
I don't. No. There's so many other things I wanted to say.
He did good baseball.
But he did the good on the baseball.
Mm-hmm. And for the Yankees always.
Yeah, always for the Yankees. So I like that. Mm-hmm. And he was really good at hitting home runs. Good. And he was often voted an all-star player.
Hmm.
But yeah, he also was hurt a lot. So there were several years and times that he wasn't playing because he was hurt.
Like, probably because he had that torn ACL.
And another injury that, like, part of me wanted to look up to see if I could find, like, a recording of it, but I can't bring myself to do it. In 1962, he tried to catch a home run ball, and his shoe spikes got caught in the fence, and he broke his foot.
Shut up. That hurts my butt.
Yeah. Like, can you just picture, like, just, like, chain link fence, your foot just...
That makes me want to throw up. Okay.
He broke the record for home runs in a World Series.
Oh, wow.
So he broke Babe Ruth's record of 16.
Hmm.
16 in the World Series time. Yeah. And then after breaking that record, he hit two more. So and I think that's the current record still. I don't think anybody has done that.
I'm going to Google it while you talk.
Oh, my God. Please do. Meant to go back and look it up.
Okay.
And after all of that, they still lost the series.
What?
So I think the Cardinals. Which I also find funny is that since he grew up in Oklahoma, that was probably the team that he was a fan was of rooting, growing yeah. as a kid. Which I kind of thought was funny. He retired in 1960 and gave a farewell speech to everybody. His wife and his mother-in-law were there. And when he retired, he was number three on the all-time home run list. He had hit 536 home runs.
Wow.
And at the time, this has now been broken by Derek Jeter, but he had the all-time leader in games played, or he was the all-time leader, and he played 2,401 games.
That's bonkers. Baseball players play so many, the number of games that you play, like, comparatively to other sports, when you think about, like, I mean, football is such a more high-contact sport. Obviously, right. you're getting injured.
You need to have, like, that replenished time.
Right, that recovery, but, like, the just in volume of games played, baseball is kind of crazy.
Mm-hmm.
But you are correct. He does still have the record for 18 home runs in a World Series. And Babe Ruth is still second with 15.
Wowie zowie.
And then Yogi Berra. Nobody's come close in a long time.
That's crazy.
Why is that?
I don't know.
Why is that? Someone who understands baseball more than me maybe would have a theory, but...
He would crush the home runs. And he also... There's one home run that I liked hearing about. He hit a ball that cleared the stadium in Detroit. And it was... They didn't find the ball for a while. But then a historian... Like, they found it.
Okay.
And then a historian, like, researched... Like, I feel like this needs to be, like, a mathematician or not me. But they said a historian.
Okay.
So I'm like, I don't know how much I believe this, but it's still cool.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, he apparently, like, figured that it had traveled 643 feet.
Wow.
Like, assuming that the ball was where it was and, like, they confirmed it was the ball used.
Crazy.
But that's so far.
So far.
So far. So, all of that taken into account... He, like, seems just, like, a fun-loving baseball
American dude.
Yeah.
Oh, is it not?
His personal life, he was messy. He was so messy. Did you know? He was an alcoholic.
Shit.
Did you know that?
No.
I had no idea he was an alcoholic.
I was about to ask you for a refill of my drink,
my God.
And I feel bad.
Here,
I feel
like
it's rude to
Let me pour myself some more, too.
We're still drinking from the last episode.
Sorry, not sorry.
It's Christie Brinkley's Prosecco.
Bellissima.
Official sponsor of Jelly Bowl, not official.
Cheers.
Cheers.
Okay. So, yeah, he was an alcoholic. Okay. I honestly had no idea. Like, and not that I, like, follow baseball entirely, but I knew who he was, and that wasn't the side of him that I had ever heard of. So I mentioned he got married to Merla.
Oh, God. Are things bad with Merla? Probably.
She was also an alcoholic.
Mm-hmm.
But they had four kids, Mickey Jr., David, Billy, and Danny. Billy actually developed Hodgkin's disease.
No.
And the three other children also were alcoholics.
Oh, my God.
And, yeah, I mean, in 1994, he wrote an article for Sports Illustrated. It's called...
The Sun did?
No, Mickey Mantle did.
Oh, okay.
And it's called Time in a Bottle. Oh. And I honestly, like, I was in tears... reading it, it's so, oh.
Yeah.
Because it was, I mean, I'll get into it, but that was right at the time where he had become sober.
Okay.
And just trying to go back. I'll go into it,
because
I kind of summed it up. But I would say that it was a good read, and it was just, it was heartbreaking.
Mm.
Oh, I did want to also say, after he retired, he was always available for his fans.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, he started a restaurant in New York.
Huh.
And so he would be, like, he would often be out and about, also socially, because he was out drinking all the time.
Ugh.
But he felt really involved with his fans, and if he had a date to, like, sign autographs or be somewhere, he would be there. He just would often be drunk.
Ew,
but, like,
okay. he felt the good with the bad.
Yeah, he felt pride that he never missed an engagement because of his drinking.
Mm. I guess.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. In his retirement, he would oftentimes start his morning with what he called, with his good friend Billy Martin, who played with him. He was also an alcoholic.
Okay.
What they would call the breakfast of champions.
No.
They would have
it's not funny. No, it's not at all.
They would have a big glass filled with brandy, Kahlua,
shut up,
and cream.
That you could not pay me to drink that.
Nope.
I'm a fan of
let alone at like 8 o'clock in the morning.
I'm a fan of a breakfast cocktail, like a mimosa or a Bellini.
You can even leave out the orange juice.
Even a screwdriver. I can get behind, like, one of those with a brunch.
Yeah.
But everything you just said makes me want to die. Brandy, Kahlua, and cream? Uh-huh. Doesn't that curdle? Curdle's a terrible word.
Yeah,
it is. Okay. Okay, so that's the breakfast of champions.
That was, like, breakfast. He would have a couple bottles of wine. Bottles of wine throughout the day. And according to him, he didn't count that as drinking. Like, the wine wasn't liquor.
Wine isn't drinking.
Yeah.
Okay. Mickey. That's rough.
He finally did come to the realization he needed to stop. And, like, he reflected on that he didn't think that he would live that long because his family, like, his grandfather, father... all had died so young from Hodgkin's disease, but that was kind of unknowingly at the time because they worked in the mines. Like, that played a huge part.
I never even put that together.
I didn't either. But that was probably the reality of it, and they didn't know at that time. So he was like, I'm just going to live my life.
I'm going to die at 40.
Yeah.
I'm here for, what is it?
But, like, he talks in that article, like, that his memory was gone. Like, he couldn't remember things. Mm. He was in his best friend in Billy Martin's wedding, and he doesn't remember being there.
I remember being at your wedding.
Oh, my God. I remember being at your wedding, too.
Yes. Aww. But Mickey didn't remember Billy's
wedding. He didn't remember, which, that's terrifying. But he recalls that he would think about, like, when he'd try to come up with, like, what did he look like throwing a ball or running or what was his favorite pitch to hit? And he couldn't remember his body doing, like, he couldn't think of it.
He couldn't, like, picture that?
Yeah. And his memory was literally gone. And it all came to a head when he was on a flight. He was really dehydrated and he thought that he was dying. He was hyperventilating.
So was he having, like, a panic attack probably? Yeah.
So he had multiple anxiety attacks, and then he finally knew that he had to go in.
Yeah.
And he, you know, had mentioned it to his friends, and they're like, you do what you need to do. We think we support you, but we knew that we wouldn't be able to say, you need to go in. We knew you needed to go, but
we knew we couldn't.
Yeah, you had to do it on your own. So he finally contacted the Betty Ford Center.
Wait, I'm sorry, what year is this, like, about? Is he still playing?
No.
This is, like, after he's retired.
So, yeah, this is after he's retired.
Okay.
This is, like, literally 1994.
Oh, it is the 90s. Okay.
It's the 90s now. Like, he had been drinking, like, for heavily like this for 42 years-ish. Oof. Yeah. Maybe not as bad.
Right.
So he acknowledged that he started drinking heavily like that after his father's death. Mm. And so he was still a player at that time, right. Like, but just starting his career.
That's around the time that he was, like, getting big into his peak of...
Yeah.
Wow.
That, and at that time, they would do away games by train, is how they traveled.
Mm-hmm.
And they had a 2-drink limit, but it wouldn't be enforced. And him and Billy Martin would just... They'd be nuts on the train. They would just be drunk dummies and like stumble into their rooms and they would stop and they'd get themselves back on track for spring training.
But I was gonna say, like, how did they do this and then be able to be the peak of their field? Like,
the manager Casey was like, you got to get it under control.
Okay.
And so, like, that it was still early on where he's like, yeah, I got it under control. And then it really amped up once he was retired. Mm. One time, while, oh my god, this is terrifying to me, but I had to include it. One time, they're staying in a hotel, like an away game thing, on the 22nd floor. They climbed out of the window to see what was going on in the other rooms. Like, thought it would be funny.
To, like, climb around the building?
Mm-hmm. So, like, they started going around to the next window, but the windows were all dark because it was nighttime. People were sleeping. Oh, and the ledge was so narrow, they couldn't turn around. So they had to, like, hold on to the rail around the whole building to get back into their room.
Oh, no. Nope.
Oh!
No thanks.
So, like, I feel like I would have, after that night, been like, I need to get help.
Oh, no.
But 30 more years later, he still was like, oh. So, yeah, he went to Betty Ford, and he got the help he desperately needed.
Mm-hmm.
He would share all of those, like, stories like that one.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, he said that, like, he'd share them, and he would tell those stories in, like, his previous life, mm-hmm. and people would laugh, and you know, you get a big show out of it. Mm-hmm. But then when he shared them in the clinic, it was not funny, and it's
really scary.
Yeah. So.
Wow. Great, because it is terrifying. But I could see how, like, especially when, I would imagine it doesn't help when you're in a position of, not, like, power, but, like, when you're such a successful person and, like, such a big personality, like, it would be difficult for someone to be able to like, have to step in and say, like, you're out of control.
Oh, yeah. And, like, it was just who he was. And people, like, he reflected in the article, too, saying he's like, I thought I was just this fun-loving,
mm-hmm.
you know, just having fun guy. And, like, there'd be times where he was...
Where you, like, don't have a reality check.
He wasn't mean or anything, but he was loud, and it was just like, you've had too much.
Right. Yikes.
Yeah. So, he went to Betty Ford, and so that was in 1994. He died a year later, which is what makes that reading that article so... Mm. Heartbreaking, because at the end of it, he's like, I'm starting a foundation. I'm starting this.
Mm.
I feel like I played the part in my children becoming alcoholics, and I can't wait to have lunches with them and not mean I'm going to go out and drink. And
so he was like turning over this new leaf, and yeah.
So he received a liver transplant. His liver was garbage.
Yeah.
Obviously.
Mm-hmm.
Which that was in itself a little controversial. People were like, oh, you're famous, so of course you get liver.
Yeah, I was going to say, when he also was not young.
No. But he... But they still stuck with it, that he had waited and he was the next one on the list, so... Who knows? But soon after the transplant happened, they found that the cancer had spread to his whole body.
Oh.
So he died August 13th, 1995. Before he had died, though, he made peace with Merla. They were kind of separated. Like, they never actually got divorced, but mm-hmm. it was like, I'm going to do my thing, you do your thing.
Yeah.
I think that there were several, like, little infidelity things happening.
On his part.
Yeah.
Right.
Like, I don't, maybe on hers too. I don't know. Okay. But they were just like, we're not going to be divorced, but we're just not going to be with each other.
Okay.
But they made peace, and she was with him when he died. So
that's good.
On a more kind of uplifting note, I wanted to talk more about Betty fucking Ford.
Let's talk about Betty, y'all.
The Betty Ford Clinic,
mm-hmm.
or, like, I think it was Betty Ford Foundation then, and now it's Betty Ford Clinic.
Right.
I thought was really cool when I was doing some research with it. In 2014, Betty Ford Clinic merged with Hazelden Foundation.
Minnesota.
Which is Minnesota!
I mean, I'm sorry, but, like, I knew about Hazelden in Minnesota, not from personal experience, but I knew that that existed because sometimes you'd hear about, like, a famous person
being this there.
Like, I'm not trying to, like, make light of someone's plight and, like, real addiction and struggle and disease, but, like, sometimes you'd hear about a celebrity
being in Minnesota
because of they would be going to Hazelden.
Yeah.
Because nothing really happened.
Exactly.
In Minnesota.
So it's all we had.
Like, not that it's a claim to fame, because we had Prince.
Yes.
God, I wish Prince was in the song.
Oh. Why isn't he, Billy?
Could just do an episode we on can. Prince. Anyway. Okay.
So Betty Ford. So I read up on her, and oh my gosh, what a life she had. So I had to mention her, and she really honestly could have her own episode too.
Right.
So I'm just gonna like quick run down her life, because it is amazing.
Good.
So she grew up in the Great Depression.
Mm-hmm.
So she got a job at age 11. She was a model and she taught dance.
Wow.
Which up. Like, I don't know. So she also, like, her whole teenage years, she worked with children with disabilities, continued to teach dance. She went through the loss of her father when she was only 16 years old.
Mm.
He died from carbon monoxide poisoning from working under their family car.
The
garage doors were open. And it was the day before his 60th birthday.
Oh, no.
So, like, I find that just...
nothing good.
So sad. She was married before marrying the...
Gerald,
yes. And her ex-husband was an alcoholic.
Uh-oh.
And he was in very poor health for most of their marriage. And they had just decided to file for divorce. And then weeks later, he went into a coma.
Uh-oh.
Because of his health.
Uh-oh.
So she stayed with him for another 2 years until he was better. And then they did get divorced.
Oh, boy.
But, like,
that's so
can you
hard.
Feel that life? I just, like, that alone to me is, like, how do you then marry a future president? Like,
yeah, that's
how
so,
does your life...
like, that wouldn't happen now, I don't think.
No.
Like, I don't think you'd be able to do... You wouldn't be able to have that type of a past and be first lady.
No.
Wow. That's so challenging, and she's probably still fairly young, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
So, yeah, they separated. So then she does marry Gerald. Mm-hmm. She considered herself a Republican alongside her husband, but she had a very modern view on social issues.
Cool.
Which is like, yeah.
Get it, Betty. Like what? Like... particular
Let
issues?
Me tell you.
I'm ready. I'm
she
ready.
Raised awareness for breast cancer because she herself had a mastectomy in 1974.
Can we also talk about how it's wild that, like, being outspoken against breast cancer is, like, a liberal
like talking
viewpoint
about it.
Of talking about boobs.
Talking about boobs.
50% of people got them.
She was a huge advocate for the ERA. Equal Rights Amendment, and she was pro-choice and a leader of the women's movement.
Wow.
So
yeah,
for
Betty.
A Republican lady, like,
yeah, and
God,
in that
I feel
time
that
period,
so
that's
so
really
strongly.
Progressive.
Yeah, she was when she was the first lady, she was not afraid to talk about every hot button topic.
Hmm.
And this was she was the first lady in the 70s.
Wow.
There was a lot to talk about
yeah.
in the 70s, like equal pay,
mm-hmm.
feminism, sex,
mm-hmm.
drugs, gun control, abortion, like all of it. And she also, which I just love this, which makes sense why she started the Betty Ford Clinic, she publicly talked about her addiction to alcohol and other substances.
That's so powerful.
So amazing. She was the first lady to talk about that.
Wow.
So she started the Betty Ford Clinic, and it's like really taken off and like is a model around the world
right.
for care.
Mm-hmm.
She was awarded with the Congressional Gold Medal and also received the Presidential Medal of Freedom.
Wow.
Presented to her by George H.W. Bush.
That's so cool.
Yeah.
Betty, cool.
She's really, really cool. Like went through
and
some
so
true
strong.
Adversity and
right.
like was herself like just... a lady who had gone through so much and, like, had struggles, but still was an advocate for so many different things and used her voice for good. I just, I was really happy to read about that. So we took, it had nothing to do with baseball here, but.
No, but a second ago I was like, what is this episode? I was like, oh, it's Mickey Mantle. But yeah, no, I think that's, it's important to talk about because obviously, unfortunately, the disease of addiction was a big part of Mickey Mantle's life. So yeah. I think it's cool that you talked about it.
Yeah.
And now I want to even do more research on Betty Ford.
I want to read, like, a biography.
Yeah. I think all the first ladies are really fascinating, and I'm kind of obsessed with all of them.
Yeah. Yeah.
Especially Dolly Madison.
Oof.
Who, she will not have an episode because she was obviously
she was a long time.
She was a few years before 1949, but she's my favorite. Nope, I can't pick a favorite. Who am I?
I don't know. Who, I'm like, I can't pick a favorite. I need to do more research before picking a favorite.
Yes.
But, yeah, she did some amazing things. And I'm glad that Mickey Mantle was able to go there and have that make a huge impact. And
right.
At least, I mean, it's so sad that he did die.
Within a short time. But it does make me feel happy that he did get to have, like, some peace at the end of his life.
Yeah.
I feel like...
And he's still remembered as a baseball player, like,
right.
Ultimately, I think.
Yeah, I didn't know any of that.
Yeah.
So did Mickey start the fire?
I don't think so.
I don't think so. He does make me cringe. I'm still upset about the ACL.
Yeah. He was, played with it for nearly 20 years. Never had it fixed.
Nope.
He didn't start the fire.
No.
But cool life, though.
Cool life. Big life. Big life. And still the home run World Series.
World Series home run hitter. Good for you, Mick.
Blammo.
All right, everybody. Yeah. Home run.
Come on, bye.